This is from the Midwest City Free Baptist Church.
Maybe we'll get wiser today, right? When we look at words of wisdom from the book of Proverbs. Yeah, we're going to talk about another woman. The other woman. We've been talking about one. We're going to talk about the other one. Or do some personification here. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 9, verse 13 and following. So it says this: the woman, folly, is loud. She is seductive and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house. She takes a seat at the highest places of the town, calling to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way. And she says, "Whoever is simple, let him turn in here." And to him who lacks sense, she says, "Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant." But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. You know what Sheol is? Yeah, Sheol. That's the grave. So it doesn't end on a high note, does it? So we've looked at personification. Of course, a really good writer. Some certain good writers, artists and poets, you know, people like, to make their point, one of the little devices that they use, and we've all seen it, we all kind of like it, I think, is when people personify things. They take a thing that's not a person and they write like it's a person. It sort of helps in some ways. So I got an example for you. You've seen a lot of this stuff, but I like this one, even though, and you've never heard of this one, but it's from one of my favorite songwriters who's long dead, whose name you wouldn't know if I said it. It's kind of obscure, but he did this sort of thing. So, for example, he lived in California and he wrote a song about earthquakes. We know something about earthquakes, but we don't know that much about earthquakes. Not like people out there know about earthquakes. It's kind of earthquakes, you know, that can really put the hurt on you. So he wrote about this after bad earthquakes had happened. So what he did was he wrote a song and he personified the San Andreas Fault. That's that long, dangerous fault line that's going to cause California to fall into the sea one of these days. And he wrote a song about it, but it's really clever. So this is personification, an example for you about this song. It's called Shaken. So lyrics go like this. He says, "She was a little girl from far away who came to stay. She lives out east away, beyond the city haze. They say she's long and fair with summer flowers in her hair. She bears the lovely name of some ancient Spanish saint. But you don't want to know her. You don't want to get on her bad side. You don't want her to come looking for you. If you value your life, you'll be shaken. The girl has got her faults. She sleeps a lot, and that's not all. Every now and then, she comes looking for a wild time. Normally, she's the quiet sort. But when she cuts loose, she can't be stopped. And she's a match for any chap who's dumb enough to try. And if she comes to see you, you best be out of town. She'll jolt you with her sweet caress and spin your world around, and you'll be shaken. She'll shake your teeth from your skeleton. She'll shake your house off its foundation. And when she walks on your shattered peace, she leaves a footprint size 8.3. And when she comes to town, the place she walks is holy ground. At about the speed of sound, she'll have you on your knees. And she don't mean no harm when she takes you in her loving arms. But when she's spent her charm, you will never be the same. So if you want a permanent memory of a moment in your life, just meet her in a high rise and hang on for your life. You will be shaken." See, now that's good personification, right? Those are good lyrics. Well, the writer of Proverbs, our wise and inspired writer, is doing some of that to get some important points across. We've seen it. We've been looking through these chapters. We've seen that he takes the concept of wisdom and he makes wisdom a lady, a person, a lady who you should listen to. Right? This device has been used to say, wisdom, a lady, out in public, calling out, and she's saying, "Hey, hey, simple, hey, dummy, hey, hey, distracted, you should listen to my voice. I've got things to tell you that you need in your life. You need to follow what I say. You need to hear what I'm saying. You need wisdom. You better watch out for this and that. I got warnings to give you. This will help you a lot. You should listen to me." Of course, hey, in the season of anniversaries, I'm sure there are certain men who might say that this is fitting. They might say that, you know, every man needs the voice of a woman in fulfillment of this. Why, just this morning, as we were doing sound, Jim was receiving the voice of a woman from back there in the sound booth. But let's not get into that. But it was, you know, I mean, instructions, right? Instructions, help, assistance. Lady Wisdom personifies this, but there's another woman. There's another woman with a loud voice, we're told. Also influential. Who also is trying to get people's attention and influence how they think. And this woman is the nemesis of Lady Wisdom. Sophia, as we might call her. This one is a different woman. Some people call her Madam Folly, right? Or the Lady Foolishness. Dame Dummy. I don't know. Call her what you want. Gives her own kind of instructions, and they are opposite the instructions that Lady Wisdom gives. And this is how this works. And so we get a little bit of description, and I'm going to be real simple about it by just taking these verses and just pulling out some simple points. The voice of foolishness, as we would call it. This lady personified. This voice of foolishness, we're told a few things about it, simple things, such as we will see this voice is loud. It says this very plainly, but it's ignorant. The voice is everywhere, and this voice speaks words of death. Let's say some things then about these things. Let's look at these. So this voice, we're told right up front, in simple terms, is loud. Whatever time and place in which you live, there will be a dominant culture, there will be dominant trends of popular thought in that culture that are foolish. This is always the case. Take a different time period and a different place and you just swap them out maybe. Maybe they're not the same popular trends of thought, but there will be some wrong-headed, erroneous ways of thinking that nevertheless are popular and fairly dominant. Why is that? Because we're human beings. Have you met us? This is how we are. We will, whatever the case, whatever the time period, whatever we have and don't have, whatever our circumstances, we the human race, we will come up with goofball ideas and wrong-headed things. Now, sometimes they'll be the same across the cultures, and many of them overlap because many of the most popular ones are pretty much transcultural and they just persist across all the ages. And a very popular, even if wrong, point of view can become so dominant, can become so entrenched that you hardly noticed it because that's how well it's ingrained. It's just sort of like molecules in the air that you breathe. You almost failed to notice that you bought into it because you just always bought into it. You know what I mean? That's when you know it's effective. Because you're believing it and you don't even know how or why or when you started. You just it moves into the background of your beliefs, what we might call assumptions, presuppositions, things you just find yourself believing and you're not even sure why. You just thought that, isn't that how it is? Isn't that how everybody thinks? And often we can find that that all around us, we don't realize all of these kind of assumptions we've taken on board throughout the years. And we can think that an idea is just so obvious because everyone else seems to believe it. And isn't there power in just the persistence and the popularity? Isn't there real force in the fact that if you're in a room and everyone believes it, it's like that whole thing about the 12 angry men. You know, you might be so thoroughly convinced that you're right in the jury pool, but if you're the only one, you will doubt yourself. You'll think, how could everyone be wrong? It's just so difficult. And if you were in a context where everyone seems to, everywhere you look, everywhere you go, The enemy does his best work if he can deceive people in groups, in mass. It's easier that way because then you gain the effect of everybody on everybody else. You gain that critical mass. It's harder to convince one person of a falsehood in a vacuum by themselves. But give them the force of the group, and then you have the cooperative force. People can cow each other. They can bully each other into conformity. That works best. So the voice is loud. It says in verse 13, in the translation we read, she is loud when she says it. So the KJV says clamorous. The Holman Bible says rowdy. The New American Standard says boisterous. The NIV says unruly. And the New Living Translation says she's brash. You get the picture. She's not a quiet, fading violet whispering in a corner, "Gee, I have some advice and some things I'd like to convince you." No, foolishness is always out front. It's always in your face. It's never shy. It's never hidden. Never modest about its claims. That's one of the telltale signs that should make your radar go up when someone is so loudly, utterly, thoroughly, boisterously convinced. They'll hear no exceptions. They'll consider no alternatives. They will breach no compromise. They will not suffer dissent. So even though we all know that screaming doesn't make something any more true, does it? Yelling it doesn't give it any points. Something does not become wiser or more morally upright because somebody really pounded a table and yelled about it. And yet, error likes to cry out in the streets. Right? Depravity kind of has a way of yelling its cause and yelling its point from megaphones. The megaphones don't help. So, this is interesting because one of the popular caricatures of us, unfortunately, in the culture is that we are loud. I'm talking about you people now, you church-going Christian people with your biblical way of seeing things and your sort of traditional Christian understandings. You're loud. You're pushy. You're preachy. You're so insistent that everyone has to believe like you do. And so you're out there forcing your views upon people. Now you may bristle and say, "That's not me. Why would someone say that?" But you should know that this is commonly what people might think of you, just by your identification as such. Oh, you people. This I think is a part of a deception. Look, there are brothers and sisters of ours, God bless them and God help them, who are annoyingly loud and obnoxious, right? Please don't point fingers at this time. But, you know, you've met them, right? And they're noisy about it. They drive people away. There are people like that. But I think it's fair to say I've known a lot of Christians in my time, in different places, of different ages. I don't think that's the norm at all. Most of them are not pushy, preachy, noisy, insistent, bullies. If anything today, I would probably say they would lean the other way. They're frightened, too shy about it, scared to say what they think, worried and fretting that someone won't like them. So I think this is part of the deception. Overall, when we look across the culture, I think at the most prominent voices. In fact, where are those that represent our view? We have a shared view in this room, by and large. When you look out across the airwaves, when you look out across the vast world of entertainment, which is an entire universe in itself, you know, and across social media, where you know the trillions of people are sending out all their one-liners right across, and how often do you see your view represented in the noise? It's a minority. So it's not really the church that has the megaphone of influence in our society, though statistically they keep telling us that we have so many professing Christians. So it seems that there are groups that represent tiny percent, but their microphone is way louder. And then you have this group that's supposed to represent a lot, but they're just a quiet little mouse whispering into the culture, afraid of getting stomped. But anti-Christian voices are often loud and sometimes crass and sometimes offensive, and they can be pretty harsh. Well, this is what we're told in Proverbs. Then this voice is loud, so get used to that. Know that. It also says that this voice is ignorant. Now, the ESV included the word seductive. You saw that in the text. This is actually a little bit of a controversial translation of the Hebrew term. I mean, it's certainly true that there is an alluring aspect. In fact, later in the verses, it says that, you know, the voice, she promises things to people. You know, come on over here. this bread is sweet to eat. You know, so she is seductive in that way. But that word there in that verse, not everybody translates it like the ESV. But they all clearly say that the voice is ignorant. It says that it knows nothing. Speaks loud and knows nothing. What does that mean? It says this clearly. Does that mean that your enemy is just a bumbling moron? Well, by no means is that true, because we're told throughout the scripture that the true enemy of mankind, the clever one, the unseen one, that's part of the deception. The unseen one is highly intelligent. Highly intelligent. More so than you. The serpent is craftier than all the others. All the others. And one of his chief titles is deceiver. And he's very good at what he does. He's an exceptional talent at doing this job. And by the way, all alone, left to your own powers by yourself, you're no match for him. You probably should be careful all the trash talk you do. I will go out and slay the wicked demons of the world. They must bow before me. They're not scared of you. Right? You outside of the protection under which you live and the name you invoke and to whom you belong, he's not scared of you by sight, not by a long ways. You're no match. But he traffics in lies primarily. So that, you know, and lies, of course, are more than just the false things that are said. Sure, a false thing is a lie, something that somebody stated that's not true. But lies are also cleverly things that are forgotten or left out. So when we read here that this voice is ignorant, it doesn't mean that the mastermind, that the enemy of man, is some bumbling idiot. No, the mastermind knows a lot. Your true enemy is exceptionally knowledgeable about so many things, which is why he's so effective. However, the messengers that he uses, the tools in his hands that he uses in this world, are often extremely ignorant because they're confused. This foolish lady, this loud voice is an ignorant voice. Now look, I said when we were talking about wisdom, I think I hope I beat this sufficiently into the ground. I said over and over, this is not about natural intelligence. This is not about IQ, being wise. So if that's true on the one side, then by contrast and conversely, being a fool is not about being, quote, uneducated, not knowing as many facts as somebody else. That's not what's being said. This is more of a willful ignorance, a purposeful unwillingness to see and recognize and believe what is true because you like dumb ideas better because they suit you better, because they offer you things. So this is a moral failing, not, oh, well, poor thing, you just didn't get a chance to get educated enough. That's not what this is. I got to confess now to you, confession time, that I have this automatic reaction constantly. I mean, like every day. When I step into the main flow, the big river, which what I mean is news, you know, information, opinions, tweets, social media stuff, whatever you see, interviews. People, all this stuff, that, you know, the river is flowing swiftly every day, right? I mean, you can't even keep up with it. But every day if I dip my foot in it, I got to admit, I have these reactions every day. And they're more than simply a cold observation that is wrong. They're accompanied by an emotional reaction of annoyance that says, not just that is wrong, but that is stupid. I think that pretty much every day. And this, so this kind of ignorance then that many of us, I'm sure you share this, that many of us find not just wrong, but very annoying, like it grates on you when you hear it. You think, God, how can people think that? This verse refers not then to innocent kind of ignorance. Look, we're all ignorant, aren't we? Ignorant of so many things. I mean, if we're just talking about knowledge that I lack, well, I mean, like, there are libraries full of things I don't know. Libraries. I mean, how little we know. So we're all ignorant of all manner of lesser facts of importance. The number of molecules in a potato chip. I don't know. And that's just one of a billion things I don't know. So ignorance per se isn't the issue. Ignorance as defined like that. That's an innocent thing that we're all good to admit. It's just we just don't know about 100 million things. This is different. We are talking here about a willful ignorance. It's rooted in suppression of truth. Romans 1 and 2, remember? They suppress the truth in unrighteousness. I don't want to see that. I don't want to recognize that. I don't want to know that. I don't want to acknowledge that. I would simply rather do my thing my way. I like it better. And this is not unique to Proverbs, by the way. Other people in the culture use the word this way. How often do you hear people describe a person or a group of people with whom they disagree and they think they're wrong, and they'll say about them, well, that's just ignorant. Right, if somebody says something offensive or mean, right, sometimes what the person will say is, what an ignorant comment. They don't just mean, why, you simply lack a piece of data that could be solved quickly. I could just tell. They don't mean that, do they? They mean something moral in nature. They don't just mean how ignorant, as in, why, you haven't learned something I need to teach you. They mean, no, you're saying something wrong on purpose. You're meaning to be this way. It's the same way we often use the word uneducated. What an uneducated idea. That is an uneducated comment you just made right there. I can't believe you're so uneducated. They don't just mean, here's a book to read. Let me put you through a course on whatever. They don't mean literally simply that you need to acquire a certain piece of knowledge. They mean you need to get your head right and think right because you are letting yourself say stupid things for reasons that are morally suspect, to put it lightly. So other people use the words in this similar way, don't they? We've probably all used it that way. This foolish influence, this foolish voice, so loud out there, but so willfully ignorant. So much the voice chooses not to know, conveniently forgetting or suppressing or ignoring. And that is not an innocent form of ignorance. Flannery O'Connor said, ignorance is excusable when it is born like a cross, but when it is wielded like an axe with moral indignation, why, then it is something else entirely. See the difference? When I take opinions and I purposefully inflict them, wield them, do damage with them because they are wrong ideas and I should know better, that's what Lady Folly is about. And that's different from simply, there's something I haven't been taught yet, or I just was misinformed somehow. So it's ignorant. It's also ubiquitous. There's your Latin vocab word of the day. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. Foolish opinions are omnipresent, aren't they? Everywhere you look. Expect to encounter foolishness in different forms wherever you turn. And we're told, especially in prominent places. Sometimes we have this idea that this false hierarchy or elitism that says, if you're a regular old working class blue collar person, you're likely to be probably more foolish. But if you're up here in prominent places, if you're important, if you have money, if you have wealth, if you have somehow you've achieved fame, or you have a degree in whatever it is, why, we should listen to you. You're automatically just stamped wise on you. That in itself is idiotic. She takes her seat in the high places in the town, it said, didn't it? She also sits in her doorway. So yeah, she's out there speaking just in the neighborhood, just in the common spaces. However, she's also present in the high, prominent places too. The enemy isn't satisfied to just play down here where there's little influence. The enemy wants the big microphone. The enemy wants to control the platforms of information. Because then you can choke out the voice of truth. Because you have whoever controls the microphone, you know, it whoever has the camera in hand holds power. So false and unwise belief can be hard to resist because it is pervasive. It's everywhere. The biblical understanding of life then sort of gets snuffed out. It doesn't get the water and the nutrients. It doesn't get the sunlight in the culture. That, I mean, just look at everywhere you go. So a person wakes up in the morning, and what does a person do? Well, a lot of people these days go straight online. I better go check what's going on in the world. And when they step into the river, right, they see, like, here are 100 opinions from people I know. Now here are 100 opinions from famous people I don't know personally, but they're famous, so I see their opinions too. Then here come 50 headlines. Then come here 3 or 4 opinions. Then here come advertisements. Then I'll entertain myself for a while with some TV shows and whatnot. So I'm going to get that. I'm going to get the background influences of whatever, however they see the world, the lens through which they see things. And all in a day's work, I lay my head down at night, and what have I received? Well, I've received, you know, a billion different points of influence, largely sharing the same overall worldview and perspective, the same overall take on life, you know, that they all had. And how many of those represented a biblical view of life? That's a teeny, teeny one. So the average person might sort of hold out and fight against that because they might say, well, I'm a Christian, and so I'm going to, you know, read my 3 verses today and a little devotional thought. So it's kind of like, here's the giant, barrel from which I will drink today, and here's my dropper. And I'll go, beep, beep, and here comes 3 or 4 Christian drops. But the rest of it's a different flavor. You see why this is so hard? Because the voice of foolishness, it's everywhere. It's all around. It's difficult not to hear it, difficult not to be influenced by all these wrong ideas. Ideas that assume that God has no part in this. God didn't make all this. He's not responsible for anything in this world that's good. You did that, although if we're going to think about God, we're just going to blame Him for anything bad. Because the voice of foolishness decides to think about God only to blame Him, pretty much. You know, that's the only time God factors in, is just to get blame. See that kind of worldview? And so all the great things of the world, I got them coming to me. So there's a sin, pride, the voice of foolishness, pride rather than humility. We don't submit to God. We submit really to no one but our appetites. And we deserve everything good. It's self-focused. It's narcissistic. It thinks that I'm the most important thing. Life is all centered around me. What matters most is me. Above all else, my happiness, my immediate joy and whatever. And my moral framework will then be colored by that. What pleases me must be what's good. You see what I mean? You know how this works. I'm saying that's what's in the air at all times. Well, got to get to the last one here. This voice is speaking and speaking soothing words, alluring words. But Lady Wisdom chimes in to give us a serious warning about what Madam Folly is trying to do. The foolish voice is not just... it's not just a cute little thing we're doing here. This is a dangerous voice. Proverbs isn't just a nice little bunch of truisms. You know, aren't those wonderful? Proverbs is deadly serious. She says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But what this poor fool who's listening and buying into this, who follows this, what he doesn't know is that the dead are there. He's being lured into his own tomb. Her guests are in the depths of Sheol. And Sheol is the grave. You go there to die. So it's death luring you in. She lures the simple with a bunch of false promises. Oh yeah, this way of life pays off. Think like this. Order your life like this. Organize your value structure like this. Oh, you'll be so happy. So living like a fool then, it can be fatal. In one way or another, it can be fatal. This writer of Proverbs, like the psalmist, like the law that's given to Moses, like what all the prophets seem to echo over and over, this writer is saying what they all say, which is that the words of God, the word of God is life. It is life, it is health, it is nourishment. That's what truth gives you. Jesus said his words were life. The opposite words, the words that the enemy lures people in with, they lead to death. And you can say, well, you know, people might think some wrong ways, but it'll all get ironed out. But if you get the truth wrong, reality is likely to hurt you. Spurgeon said, a lying doctrine will soon beget a lying practice. A man cannot have an erroneous belief without, by and by, having an erroneous life. You will end up living up to or living down to your dominant beliefs. And so how many people do you know who thought they were being really smart in the decisions that they made? Foolish decisions. And it ruined their lives. I bet people could testify. In fact, some of us might be able to testify about ourselves. Haven't you heard a lot of testimonies like this? So we uphold truth and we expose lies, not because we just want to harsh on people's good time, or we just like to judge others. We do it because this is a life-saving ministry to do this. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul says, for though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. And what does he mean? The next verse he says, we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and we take every thought captive to obey Christ. You see what I mean here? In the Old Testament, you know, the people of Israel were supposed, when they went into the land, when they finally got to go into Canaan, they were told, tear down all the pagan altars. Get rid of them. They represent false gods and destruction. They represent a whole lot of degrading and immoral practices that were part of the worship of those false gods. And in some cases, they represented atrocities committed as babies were sacrificed to those gods. Tear them down. Paul says, the church now enters the world, and we're not physically going like Israel into a land as a people to tear down literally those things. But he says, we're now fighting a battle spiritually against what? Strongholds and powers. We think spiritual warfare is always about the snarling demon, you know, with the vapors. And sort of like, you know, you got to throw that holy water on him. And then he screams. And we think we see it all in sort of like fantastical, supernatural thing. We forget the most obvious. The enemy's not a moron, you see. He's clever. So he operates through what might seem like good ideas to people. To lure people in. And so Paul says, we don't destroy people. We destroy arguments and bad opinions. Not because we're know-it-alls, but because we're into saving lives. And the lady with the foolish voice, she's going to kill. She's out for blood. She's going to lure them in. And then they're going to find that the door locks one way, and it's suddenly welcome to the Hotel California. Right? Yeah, they check in, they can't check out. Only then do they find out what kind of a mess they're in. Right? And they'll be stabbing with their steely knives, but they just can't kill the beast. I'm sorry, I'll stop right there. But you see what I mean? I had to just finish the analogy out, since we're personifying things here. This poetic reference isn't just poetry. It's real life. It's real life. And there is no, we will never apologize then for the sake of people and for the good of all people being voices for truth as this river kind of flows by and carries people to ruin and depression and destruction and dysfunction and heartache and all that stuff you see around us. Have you noticed? Have you looked around? the voice of foolishness, everyone's listening, and how's that working for them? How's that working for all of them? I mean, people are just a mess. And so the voice of wisdom, we got to listen to the right lady here. And we will, in the process, we will, with God's help, pull down those strongholds that have people in their clutches and destroy those bad arguments for those destructive, wrong opinions, so that view of life, that take on life, that perspective on life, bequeathed by God, that is divinely given through all the voices of Revelation, including this one very, very wise one here, that one will lead to life and prosperity and the true happiness that people are groping around to try to find.